And now it is time for the panel. And I wonder if you're familiar with this scenario. Someone sends you an email, maybe it's a friend, a relative, a colleague, and everything is in capital letters. Now no matter what the content is, I think it's nigh on impossible to really digest the information when it feels like in 12-point Times New Roman, someone is actually yelling at you through the computer screen. And this is where typography comes in. It's what language looks like, whether it's on a poster, a street sign, a business card, or even an email where the caps lock is left on. The design and layout of the words add a voice to the text. So how can we use typography to manipulate a message or sell an idea? To investigate further, I'm joined today in our panel by Stephen Banham, who is a typographer and a lecturer at RMIT. Welcome, Stephen.
Hello, Fenella.
Hello. Karen Florence joins me too, and she is an artist and teacher at the ANU School of Art. Welcome, Karen.
Hello.
And Samuel Burns, who is a senior designer at the branding agency called RE. That's just R-E. Welcome, Samuel.
Thanks for having me.
Stephen, let's begin with you. As a typographer at Letterboxd and a lecturer at RMIT, what do you simply love about typography?
What do I love about typography? Absolutely everything. I think what most appeals to me about type is that it works on a dual level. The fact that you're not just dealing with form, you're actually dealing with content. And very often you don't have any control over that content. So what I really like about type, I guess, is that beautiful orchestration of space, because that's really what the practice of typography is all about. And I think one of the sort of myths about type is that everybody fixates on the black stuff, as in, you know, what you see, but it's actually about the white stuff. It's actually the stuff in between and around each letter form. That's actually the art.
Okay, so making us sort of look beyond just simply the letters itself, but actually how it makes us feel. So, and as of course, I mean, typography is everywhere. It does much more than simply enabling us to read a sentence or letters or things like that. It can say a whole lot more. So, for example, you can express emotions or characteristics through typography. How can that work, Stephen?
Well, I guess it's no secret, really, that a typeface is called a typeface because, in fact, many, many hundreds of years ago, they actually used to equate a typeface with a human face. And in some ways, that comparison is a perfect answer, I guess, to what you're saying, which is that a typeface can actually do virtually everything that a human face can do. It can actually express the full spectrum of kind of human experience.
So it can say love, it can say hate, it can say anger, and so much more.
Absolutely. It's a very sort of finely tuned instrument in the right hands, and that's really the power. But because it works on a very subliminal kind of level, you don't always know that you're being sort of worked on, if you want to call it that, when you're looking at type, but it does actually operate on that really deep level.
Can you tell me how I can be subliminally manipulated then? Give me an example. Say, for example, the stop sign. We see that every single day. Would that work as well as efficiently if it was in little letters or only because it's in capital letters?
No, because I guess the stop sign is a combination of a sort of necessary sense of visual volume. So therefore it has to be in caps. It has to, the kerning or the space between the letters has to be sufficient to be read from a particular distance, because that's incredibly important. There has to be contrast between the typeface and the colour in the background. So there's lots and lots of things at play just that simple stop sign that we take for granted.
Okay, so it's much more than just the word. It's about the thickness of the strokes, it's the edges, it's the curves, it's the way it makes you feel and tells you to stop your car.
Well, exactly. And particularly highway signage, of course, is tested and tested and tested and tested. There is nothing accidental about highway signage or road signage. It's a very, very engineered kind of language.
Okay. Well, I'd like to bring in my other guests in just a moment, but let's talk, Stephen, about branding, because the idea of making an impact, making a statement, whether it's a road sign or with a brand, is very important to brands who often commission typefaces that are custom-made just for them. So how can custom typography really set a brand apart?
Well, custom typography tends to basically happen for two main reasons. One, that the particular client wants their own unique voice, and that's the primary reason. But there's also the secondary reason, which is that often a custom typeface has to answer a particular problem or a particular environment. Like, for example, a typeface that operates on an iPhone or a particular website, it has to sort of answer certain technical kind of requirements. And in this age of hundreds of thousands of typefaces out there on the sort of open type market, believe it or not, there's actually a greater cause and need for a unique sort of corporate voice for a client.
And of course, matching to that is not only do you need the corporate voice, which comes through the type, but you need a logo. So Samuel Burns, as a designer at Re, which is a branding agency in Sydney, as a graphic designer, can you tell me a bit about the design process that goes into creating a logo?
I think as you guys were saying before, typography is it's language made visible. And if I take it back a step further, I'm going to steal a bit of wisdom from a wonderful designer called Bob Gill. And in the sense that when we start a brief, we try not to actually think about how the logo or the logo type is actually going to look, and we actually want to find something really interesting to say about the company, and so in that sense we get curious and we research and we research and we research.
And there's a lot of prototyping as well. So let's make up a company here. Can you make a bank friendly through its logo?
I think you can probably make anything friendly with the right typeface. and we definitely go through a lot of different attributes and behaviours that this, that the bank would want to put out there.
So, sort of softening the image somewhat, just through the shapes and things like that.
Yeah, well, I think there's been more and more. I think whether you're a bank or any sort of corporate entity, people want to feel like they can connect with you as a corporation. So I think there's a sense of people wanting to have a human, a human connection with a brand.
Okay. Karen Florence, you're an artist and you're a teacher. You work at the ANU School of Art. I mean, obviously, we're talking a little bit here about branding and selling things, logos, et cetera, and typefaces. But type and text is a very huge part of your art practice. So what is it for you about text, and in particular the arrangement of text that speaks to you?
Well, sorry, I'm a letterpress printer, or I tend to think of myself as a textual printmaker. So I'm working with solid letters, solid type. And what Stephen said about the white stuff, about the space, is really, really pertinent, because you actually have to build the white space out of blocks of metal before you can get the type to do what it does on a page. So I'm really interested in, the position of the text. I'm interested in using, it's a very limited palette what I've got, because I don't have the luxury of having digital text, digital typefaces. I've got probably about 28 typefaces in my studio, and I have to work within that constrained palette. So the interesting thing for me is to see what I can do within a really limited sort of sphere.
And the typeface itself, within that limited sphere, when you're working in your world, does each typeface have its a sort of a distinct personality?
Yeah, it's interesting. You can make a personality happen. I mean, they're very old-fashioned designs. I mean, what I'm working with is pre-designed ideas. I can't tweak or customise those faces. I mean, I have done in the past where I've got another friend, another artist, to carve into some of my wood types so that they've become like illuminated capitals. But even then, once that's done, I can't take that carving off the letter. So it's now permanently on the letter. So I have to work with it in other ways, with ink, with pressure, with the way I roll it up. I have to work with sort of more visual codes than just the typeface itself.
What's your letterpress look like?
My press itself?
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
So it's an object in itself. Stephen, do you miss the letterpress? I know that you work in a range of different areas when it comes to typography. What's the joy for you as somebody who does have that experience about this idea, this way of creating type?
I actually am very, very happy that letterpress is experiencing nothing short of a fundamental revival. It's just extraordinary, the uptake of letterpress printing now, which is incredible. And I think that's actually because there's an overall sense that we all want to kind of become physically engaged, with the design process. And of course, letterpress, ticks all those boxes. There's no doubt about it. So, but in terms of being a practicing typographer, I actually really enjoy enjoy the spectrum of experience that I can be designing a typeface for a website, but then I can turn my hand to some huge, you know, 30-foot metal sign or something. So I really like that that sort of variety of media.
Just quickly, in a simple sentence, what is a letterpress?
Well, it's relief printing. It's basically, letterpress isn't saving the world. It's just a tool in a printmaking kit. And in fact, a lot of people who are taking up letterpress these days find the actual handset type really constraining. So they tend to work on the computer, make a plate and then print it out. Whereas because handset letterpress working block by block is actually very frustrating. You know, you don't get that flexibility that the typographers have.
And it brings it back to basics, of course, as you were talking about as well. Samuel, what about for you? I mean, working in logos or in brands, what role then does sort of technologies of computers play for you? Or is it all about the pen and the pencil for you?
Oh, I think in the beginning it has to be about pen and paper. I think I'm a bit jealous of Karen in the sense that you have a limited palette to play with. I think for me, sometimes too much choice can be confusing. So it's wonderful, but I think pen and paper to begin with frees me from the distractions of the computer. And I think you might have said it before, Karen, that letterpress is a tool and the computer is a tool in the process.
Absolutely.
But it definitely doesn't give you ideas, and that's where we start our process.
So, say for something, Samuel, about like the Sydney Festival when you rebranded that as well. What was that process for you?
Well, I think we looked at the previous year's collateral, and one thing that struck us was that we're talking about Sydney here, and there's this Sydney's got a wonderful vibe to it, what we noticed was that if we covered up the word Sydney on the collateral, the current collateral, it could have been anywhere. It could have been Amsterdam Festival. It could have been Berlin Festival. So what we really wanted to do was inject a bit of Sydney into Sydney Festival. So we looked at a combination, actually, of a font and also introducing a brand element that was actually sort of a 3D element in the form of a yellow balloon. That idea, you know, it's a wonderful symbol of hope and optimism, and we paired that with Ambruisi, which is a beautiful font. And in that sense, we were able to
come up with something new.
Yeah.
Stephen, could I briefly talk about, we're talking about branding again here, and I know that you're currently showing an exhibition in Melbourne which is called Cluster, and that examines the patterns behind Melbourne's street signs. How does this show that the branded environment is nothing new?
It shows that the branded environment isn't anything new, because when we were doing our research for Cluster, we were uncovering clusters that were named, you know, in anything up to about 100 or more years ago, where entire areas of the city would be named under one particular concept or theme. And very often it was built around the idea of aspiration. And, of course, brands now, of course, are and have always been about aspiration. So it was about taking the typography one step further and looking at the actual language of these areas. And we uncovered clusters.
Can you give me a quick example?
Yeah, sure. We uncovered clusters that were named after the Beatles, after sort of 1980s Essendon players. Probably of actual most interest was, in fact, these clusters called mini Melbournes, where there'd be areas way out in the burbs where they would actually emulate the city grid of Melbourne. So you'd get, you know, Collins Street, Swanston Street, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, it was really quite odd to see these clusters scattered around. So it really does say a lot about branding.
Okay. In a lot of the brands that we see, the idea, I have a friend who's a graphic designer, Stephen, Samuel and Karen, who say that if you use lots of different fonts and mix sizes, that's not a very good idea. Is that changed? What's changed, Stephen?
Well, I would certainly say that most people are pretty much over the idea of trying every single font on the font menu. Thank God for that.
Not me.
And I think little by little people are actually beginning to understand the importance of typefaces, and with that comes that idea of sort of restraint and understanding that certain typefaces look like they do because they're they are actually designed for a purpose. And once people get their head around that idea, then they can exercise design, yeah, with a bit more restraint and control.
Okay. And Stephen, you had this campaign in the 90s called Death to Helvetica. Karen, can I get your response to that? Is Helvetica okay, or has it changed?
Oh, see, I'm one of those people that doesn't really think that, you know, knowing a font sort of defines you as a personality. But I don't have any problems with Helvetica. I don't even have any problems with Comic Sans, as long as it's used in an appropriate way.
Stephen, have you changed your attitude?
Well, I should just say that whole sort of argument was not actually about the tie face per se. It was actually about all of the values that go with it. I mean, I suppose I've just got this issue with this sort of post-war modernity thing that we just simply can't get over it in graphic design. We've just got to move on.
Certainly. Samuel?
Oh, yeah, no, I was just thinking that, and for me personally, as a graphic designer, I think you're right. You know, Helvetica, I think, can be definitely overused, and I think sometimes it can be a sign of my laziness if I want to push myself and think, now, does this really work?
It is. It's a big issue, and I think this is one that we will have to revisit here on By Design. I do thank you, all of my guests, for joining me here on the program. Stephen Banham, who is a typographer and lecturer at RMIT, Karen Florence, an artist and a teacher at ANU School of Art, and Samuel Burns, a designer at RE. Thank you for joining me on the program. And that is By Design for today. By Design is produced by Jan Ryan and Diane Dean. Our sound engineer is Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. And I'm Fenella Kernebine. See you next time.